This is Richard Horvitz, and you are listening to the Shortbox Showcase.
Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Shortbox Showcase.
Episode 30, Love is in the Air.
The purpose of Shortbox Showcase is to talk about topics in comics that fall outside of our respective solo shows.
We thought that for this one we'd be seasonal and talk about some of our favorite couples in comics right here before Valentine's Day. But first, not exactly feedback, but we did want to give some shout-outs to some of our favorite listeners ever.
And by favorite, you mean people who sent us stuff.
That is how you become one of our favorite listeners.
Right on.
It doesn't guarantee it.
But it helps.
It almost guarantees it, actually,
now that actually, I think about it. Actually, yeah.
So, Ron Sadowski from the Dinner for Geeks podcast sent us a package that had stuff for each of us, and it was even wrapped in superhero-themed Christmas wrapping paper.
Joker and Batman. That was pretty sweet.
And he put a little note in there apologizing to us for not sending feedback since way back in around episode 12 or 13, but saying that the shows since then have been excellent, but he's a bit lazy. But what I like is that for anyone else who hasn't sent feedback for a while, he has really set the going price of a make good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the bar's been set.
It's high. You know, everyone out there, challenge accepted.
So for me, he sent two trades of Sherlock Holmes newspaper strips, which I did not even know existed until I opened that package.
They are pretty sweet, too.
They're pretty good. I'm going to talk about them somewhere on the blog or here or somehow.
Find someone to talk about Sherlock Holmes with,
because exactly.
That's pretty cool stuff. And then he sent me the 7-issue miniseries from 1990, Atlantis Chronicles by Peter David, which someone had mentioned and I had said I'd heard of but didn't have, and now I have it. I'm going to sit down and read it sometime shortly.
It's very nice, very nice.
I'm intrigued. Very intrigued.
We also got a little Christmas present from faithful listener Kyle Benning from the new podcast, King Size Comics, Giant Size Fun. That's not how the way he says it, but I just sense that's the way it should
be
said.
Appropriate, yeah.
I think so. He sent me, of course, some oversized big old comics, including a Walt Simonson and Thor trade and some Conan issues, which were very nice.
Very nice.
And also internet buddy and artist Andy Kapelish, he sent some very fun art to me. I had responded to one of those Facebook memes about, you know, the color of the pants you're wearing or the shirt.
And the middle initial of your mother's name. And
one of those things. And it ended up that my superhero name was the exciting, dramatic Red Candle. Yeah, it didn't seem all that intimidating, but I concocted the backstory that obviously Red Candle would have been the sidekick to the Golden Age Alan Scott Green Lantern.
Ah, see? Yeah.
And then Andy took that and drew a mock-up of, I think it's Detective Comics 38, where Batman
is
introducing
Robin.
And he has Alan Scott introducing the Red Candle, the great comic book character find.
It's really adorable.
It's pretty awesome. We got to get those pictures scanned.
And it only gets better because he totally rolled with it and showed us the entire fictional history of the Red Candle in comic books. Let me say, the 90s Red Candle? Hoo boy!
I just think the candle theme and that many pouches is just a bad idea.
But flamethrower.
I did kind of like the new 52.
The Jim Lee collar.
I like new 52 Red Candle. So we will get those up and on the website. But Andy, thank
you're
you.
You're awesome.
Also, a shout out goes to Trennis Magnus, who included us in a list of his favorite podcasts with some pretty heavy hitters. He had said that 2014 was a pretty good year for him because he had appeared on Views from the Long Box and Pop Culture Affidavit, a couple of his favorite shows. And all he needs to swing now is from Crisis to Crisis, Comics Monthly Monday, and Short Box Showcase.
Take that, Dinner for Geeks!
Suckas! Except Ron. We like Ron.
Ron's cool.
We also wanted to give shout-outs to some of the friendly and generously hospitable podcasters who have had us on their shows recently. So, if you like us, check out some of these shows that we appeared on. First of all, Emily capitalized on her connections to one of the hosts of the Book Guy show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that was me. And we had Emily on episode 116 of the Book Guy show to talk about her Bronze Age episode about Frederick Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent. We thought that would be very book-related. And as it turned out, that same episode, we had an author, Manfred J. von Vulte, who had written a book about using comic books in
schools and literacy programs.
Yeah, educational, for educational uses. So we thought that was sort of an interesting juxtaposition of talking about Wortham, who thought comics were the worst thing ever.
Causing the destruction and decay of the English language.
And now here in the 21st century, encouraging teachers and others to use comic books for literacy and education purposes. It was a nice mix there.
Yeah. The professor was on Avengers Spotlight number 8 talking about, obviously, Doctor Doom versus the Avengers.
I like to think of it as episode 1 of Doom Spotlight, but we'll see where they go from there.
Right.
I was also on a regular non-Doom related issue of Back to the Bins 183, where I talked about the ever-exciting generic comic book that Marvel put out in the mid-1980s.
That is amazing.
Trust me, the episode was better than the comic. You really need to give the episode a chance. I'm not saying give the comic a chance. Give the episode a chance.
I mean, it's no Apollo Smile, but...
What is?
We were both on episode 19 of Who True Freaks, talking about the King Arthur-based Doctor Who episode Battlefield, which, spoilers, we loved a lot more than almost everyone else who's ever watched that episode.
Yeah, that's an episode that is continually ranked in about the bottom 20%.
Which is...
of Doctor Who episodes, so...
criminally underappreciated episode.
So Sean was very glad to have anyone come on his show to talk about that episode. It's not like we were stealing it from, oh no, Shag and Hope, they want to talk about that one. It's their... no, it's nobody's favorite episode.
Except mine.
So we were pretty safe. We were pretty safe on that one, but... you, speaking of Sean Engel...
Yes!
You just appeared on the epic... episode 150 of Just One of the Guys.
And I didn't have to put anyone in the hospital to get there, so...
To be fair, you did threaten it.
Which, you know, is about as good.
And why did you want to be on that episode?
Because it's my favorite single issue of any comic ever.
Green Lantern 150.
What else?
And I recently appeared on Tom Panarese's Pop Culture Affidavit, number 44, where I talked about books and movie adaptations, and that was a very interesting conversation. Tom got to put on his English teacher hat, and every now and then I got to throw in my business professor hat.
Right on.
But other than that...
It was very listenable episode.
Yeah, besides that, it is amazingly a listenable episode, I think.
Well done.
I've got a couple that I've recorded that have not yet come out. The unofficial 75 Greatest Marvels Countdown, hosted by Blaine Dowler. I've recorded 2 episodes so far, and I think I'm scheduled for 2 more. And the first one is supposed to come out in early March. He likes to record way in advance. And I also spent some quality time Skyping with podcasting's Michael Bailey for an upcoming episode of Bailey's Batman podcast, talking about the terrific hardcover collection Batman from the 30s to the 70s.
That is quite possibly going to be the longest episode of anything that you have ever been on.
It was pretty long.
It was about a 3.5 hour record. I was shocked that you were still awake.
It's debatable whether I was. Only...
only time will tell.
Mike. I mean, we can you can do, you know, truncate silence on Audacity. I think you can also have a wake-up guest.
That's a very useful...
if you can figure out that setting.
The Skype button.
That would be awesome. So, anyway, we just wanted to give shout-outs to folks who have been nice enough to send us stuff. Or have us on their shows. And we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about love.
Oh, my.
Hello, ladies. Listen to your man. Now listen to me. Now listen to your man. Now listen to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped downloading lame-ass podcasts and switched to Two True Freaks, he could learn to sound like me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on the Enterprise with a man your man could sound like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's a long box filled with comics that you love. Look again. The comics are now episodes. Anything is possible when your man listens to Two True Freaks and not lame asses. I'm on a tauntaun. It's all right. There's something wonderful about love. There's something wonderful about love. There's something lost about me with you. There's something blind about the chosen few. There's something wonderful about love. Sorry to call so late. The planet turned 4 times. You're on my mind, but you're nowhere in my world. Please kiss the little bird. God bless the cozy cage we share. You kill me, you thrill me. You threaten my dreams, girl. There's something wonderful about love. There's something wonderful about love. There's something liberating death alone brings. There's something funny about a lot of sad things. There's something wonderful about love.
And we're back. Hello, ladies. And by that I mean, hello, Emily.
Hello, Emily, possibly Hope, and all of the other men listening to this podcast.
Well, there you go. I'm not saying that's totally our demographic, but that's pretty much our demographic.
I've seen our Facebook page. That's pretty much our demographic.
That is true. That is true. Now, we wanted to take this Valentine's-themed episode and talk about comic book relationships. Dating and marriages and all of that. And in general, Emily, how do you feel about comic book characters getting married? Or more broadly, to put it in what some comic executives have said, how do we feel about comic book characters being, I don't know, happy?
Huh, you know, I've really got to think about whether I want my escapist fantasy to have happy endings. Yes?
What is so crazy about that?
I don't know! The other one that was more ridiculous is, oh, but the problem is we can't find ways for these characters to get into realistic conflict. Have you been married? Have you had a steady girlfriend? Have you had any sort of difficulties with family life in general? Because I'm pretty sure 90% of your readers have.
You know, we're going to talk about a whole range of relationships and couples, but just what you're saying there, I thought... that while MJ and Peter Parker were married, I mean, they never were married, but in the time before they never were married, when they were married, oh, my head hurts. I thought they really got a good handle on struggling young couple.
Yes.
And that there is dramatic tension in that.
A lot of it. You know, this is, you know, something we've mentioned a couple times is the importance of diversity. And not just in buzzword diversity, but in all aspects of life. that there should be heroes that are young and old and male and female and single and happily married and divorced and dating. There should be a whole range of different types of relationships to be found in different characters. If you're looking for a way to have a unique character, there's a way. They have an ex-wife, and that gives them conflict because they also have a daughter who has superpowers. How do you co-parent a child with superpowers when your ex-wife does not know either of you are powered? Congratulations! You just have an entire story engine.
I just think it's insane not to let that be part of character's character.
And then also on that point, not to say that we should have the, I can't even say 50s norm, because God, how long did it even take Superman and Lois to get together? But we don't necessarily need the Leave It to Beaver ideal of every person must be in a steady, long-term committed marriage with no major shakeups or problems. But there should be some of those. There should be a couple people who are just really nice people who are happily married. And some people who are really nice people but can't get along. Or people who had some sort of problems and used to be together and now they don't. There should be variety.
And we talk about sort of the escapist nature of this. And certainly the combination of the visuals and the prose. You know, the visuals are over the top. Men and the women have proportions that are impossible to muscle bound and to whatever. You know, but that's sort of part of the vibe of comic books, is it's sort of enhanced version of reality. And then maybe the relationships should be that as well. You know, we know people who are married, so we'll have examples of great marriages, examples of great dating, examples of drama, because we know people who have been in dramatic, bad relationships. Let's put that to the extreme as well. Like, let's give examples, maybe exaggerated examples, but give examples of all of these things.
Things that you can recognize as real, even though they're not realistic.
You know, that's part of the impetus in storytelling, to give characters some conflicted backstory, perhaps. You know, something in their past that drives them, you know, the psychological aspects of heroes. And certainly, you know, Batman is classically that, and his cast. But you know, he's not the only one. A lot of characters have some sort of dramatic backstory. You know, we've talked about the shame that very few characters have fathers in their lives, at least in the DC comics, it seems like. You know, that we push for some type of diversity in that. You know, just sort of all types of stories should be welcome, all types of backstories, all types of relationships.
But that's sort of true for all fiction. All fiction should have varieties.
Exactly.
And there should be many types of stories with different types of characters and all that sort of thing. But specifically in superheroes, when we were thinking about the types of couples, it broke down into three very general groups for superhero comics specifically,
right,
about how we could sort of categorize these types of relationships.
You've got your non-powered and your non-powered. And this is usually in the sense of a superhero comic. This is probably going to be your side characters. Or, you know, we've mentioned our love for the post-crisis version of Superman, where the Kents are a loving and happy couple and the best parents in comic books.
They're so amazing! So wonderful! So perfect! So they are... What we were saying, that if Superman is the Superman, they are the super couple. They are everything that a sweet, loving, but sort of in a way tough as nails beneath the surface, take no nonsense, old Midwestern couple are. They are that.
I think what they don't take is guff.
I've got a feeling they do not take guff. Mm-mm. No. And not only is this common with side characters, but this is, when I was conceptualizing this, is really common for former love interests or jilted love interests. The two that immediately came to mind for me were Lana Lang and Pete Ross getting together, and all of the weirdness that implies. naming their kid Clark. Oh, that family has so many issues. Anyway.
We need to get Dr. Andrew Lettamendi on that case. Forget Arkham Sessions and analyzing Batman.
Explain Lana Lang her psychosis.
You need to get Lana on the couch for a while.
Oh, she needs help. But anyways, Lana Lang and Pete Ross getting together in the absence of Superboy and Clark moving on with his life, and the two of them, in a sense, being sort of left behind in Smallville. And then one relationship that I personally just adore, which is Steve Trevor and Etta Candy, of Wonder Woman's two best friends ending up together. And in both of those cases, it's because it's something that I recognize, that that's really common for friend groups to date within that friend group. And that if you have these sort of, we'll call them major supporting characters, it kind of makes sense that whichever character or love interest or best friend doesn't end up in a romantic relationship with the lead is fairly likely to end up in a romantic relationship with one of the other side characters. I thought that was interesting.
I think it speaks to the strength of a book's supporting cast for this even to be possible. For there to be enough non-powered characters in the lives of the books as we're seeing them. And, you know, we've mentioned Pete and Lana, and I was thinking of the Whites. And to some extent, I was thinking of Cat Grant and her ex-husband and their son. And really, all of that is coming out of that same era, what is now known as the From Crisis to Crisis era of Superman that Mike and Jeffrey talk about. Obviously, the Kents are alive and well in that iteration of the story as well. It just speaks really to how cohesive and well-written that Superman family of books was from that era, that we have so many examples of this type of side character relationship
right
in that era of comics.
Right.
So it takes a sort of a special kind of book, I think, to have this even available. We had sort of struggled to come up with ones in this category just because, well, that's not really the focus in...
Right. And I think maybe that's why these relationships tend to be, in a way, sort of the remaining legs of a love triangle.
Right.
Because, you know, for good and ill, a lot of times the non-powered supporting characters are there to be part of a love triangle.
I mean, that's standard literature of any kind, not just comics.
Right. But then it's good to think that sometimes when those love triangles collapse in and the main character comes regularly, long-standingly, permanently engaged with another character, that those two characters can also get together. That it doesn't have to devolve into, oh, but I'm so unloved and meh. So what I'm saying is, Arrow, start marrying people off. It will make your show better.
That's true. They've got a lot of potential. A lot of this type of character. So the current ship is Felicity and Anybody. Is that pretty much?
Yeah, basically.
I did like the one picture someone posted. It was of the Atom riding on the Flash's shoulder from like Super Friends or something. And they're saying, hey, let's go flirt with Felicity just to annoy Ollie.
Yeah.
That is what friends are for. Then we move into from non-powered and non-powered to the one you mentioned, which is most common, the powered and non-powered couple. So that's obviously classically your Peter and Mary Jane or Clark and Lois, sort of as the, I would say, the prototypical version of that category of relationship.
Yeah. And a lot of times it does end up breaking down into the hero and girlfriend. Or, in one notable exception, the hero and boyfriend with Wonder Woman and Steve. One of the problems with relationships in comic books is that they do not progress at a normal rate. Now, because time is weird in comic books. Because on the one hand, since a story is coming out usually monthly, there needs to actually have a lot of time pass in issues to make it feel like an ongoing process in order to not make a relationship feel rushed, even though it might take 2 years, and that would be an insanely long period of time to be moving from the, you know, proposal stage to a wedding. That was about how long it took for Barry and Iris to get married, but that's because it was only 24 issues.
Right.
The other weird thing is that people don't really age in comic books. Not really. Which gives us some really, really weird age differences. How old is Reed? And how old is Sue?
We don't discuss.
And how long have they been married?
Some things we just don't discuss in polite company. Okay?
There are some cans of worms best left untouched.
I tell you. Like you said, this is the standard from the Dibneys and the Strangest. You mentioned Barry and Iris. And one I really have never liked, though it fits that same template, is Hal and Carol Ferris.
Yeah.
This is something about... From the Silver Age on up, I've never just dug that relationship.
Yeah, because...
And again, it fits the same template. I mean, they're sort of drawing from the same well, but it's something about the way those characters have always been characterized. I just never bought that one.
Yeah. I think I never bought that they were really in love. I don't know if it's because... Hal, as a character, is so kind of stoic and straight-laced that I never quite bought him being head over heels for Carol. Or Carol, I don't know, maybe trying to be like a non-Lois Lane, at least at some points in like the early 70s. She was very much like the strong, empowered woman. I run my own company. I don't need no man.
Right.
Which, when combined with Hal, who is like the prototypical space cop, is just very strange. I'm not a big fan either.
To me, that's one that could easily be jettisoned. I mean, to some extent, on the Flash TV show, Barry and Iris are not currently a couple. You imagine at some point they will be, or there's certainly potential. There's certainly potential there. And, you know, Clark and Lois, sort of, they're almost destined to be together. I think in any comic version, they sort of have to eventually come together. But Hal and Carol, if they wanted to break them up or split them up or... to not have that relationship be part of the status quo, that one would be fine with me.
Yeah. Or if in a book, a movie, a TV show, or whatever, in whatever context that this story was being told, to have Carol be the girlfriend and they break up. And then she's just his ex and occasional partner and friend.
Right.
That's a valid relationship for the two of them to have, but right. I do not buy... head over heels in... I cannot see them becoming the Kents. I cannot see them 50 years down the road, growing old together, just happily content in one another's company. I just don't buy it.
Mm-hmm. You know, but I think of superheroes as sort of the equivalent maybe of star athletes here, where they're the single ones will be surrounded by women. You might have that... or rock stars.
Yeah.
You might have that sort of superhero groupie type of relationship develop it there, and sometimes in rock stars or in athletes it's hard to have a long strong marriage because of those being on the road temptations. I don't know specifically of books that have covered that or relationships that have covered that, but that would be an interesting one to poke at a little bit.
Yeah, and this brings another sort of interesting twist to this, which is that in a lot of these cases of the powered non-powered couple, the non-powered person is actually dating the secret identity.
Right.
That they are not dating the hero, which is an interesting thing and gives us the classic Clark, Lois, Superman love triangle.
In real life, that decision to reveal is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, that is secondary to or maybe greater than the marriage proposal.
Yeah.
Would be that revelation.
I'm thinking about these. It's Clark and Lois, and then Lois and Superman.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
That it's the girls in a lot of these cases sort of pine over the heroes, but aren't actively dating the hero or involved with the hero. For all that her comic book said, Superman's girlfriend. She's not dating Superman. She's dating Clark.
Right. I mean, from a very practical standpoint, it would be really hard to date the Flash.
Yeah. But that
and not date Barry.
Well, because it's just a question of that public persona now. That
right.
I'm sort of thinking about if that would even be possible to have a supporting character who begins dating a hero as a celebrity. You know what I'm saying? A person and going out in costume with that person and not knowing their secret identity.
Right. That would be...
difficult.
Weird.
Yeah. Wouldn't it? And yet we buy it when Lois is totally pining over Superman.
You're dating Iron Man. He wants to take you out to dinner. How does he eat? I mean, does his little mouth thing open up enough to... I mean, assuming he's not known as Tony at this point.
Right.
I mean, in his secret identity.
Johnny Storm is going out on a date, and he needs to protect his secret identity. Does he just flame off his mouth?
Oh, that's good. I wonder if that's why Stan and Jack were sort of smart enough to give those guys public identities. The Fantastic Four's never really had secret identities. I wonder how much of that was a choice to be different, how much of that was a logistic choice, how much of that was... the guy can burst into flames. I mean, it's not really... how are you going to keep that secret? The one guy's a big orange monster.
Yeah. Well. It's kind of hard to keep that under wraps.
So...
though a fedora and a trench coat go far.
That is true. Yeah.
Oh, Johnny Storm, you are the biggest idiot in space and time.
Well, no, I have listened to Andy and Steve talk about those early Strange Tales. And, oh, yeah, that's right. You are correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are indeed correct.
Biggest dumbass in comics.
Yeah. Wasn't there one where everyone knew his secret identity?
And they were humoring
but
him.
But nobody in the town told him because they were humoring him?
Yes. And the best part is that the wizard was literally the last person on the planet to find out. Johnny Storm was who he had been trying to kill for 35 issues. His sister had a public identity. Everyone knew he was Johnny Storm, brother of the Invisible Girl. Good times.
But the 1963 Google was really just not what it is today.
That's true. That is true.
And Wikipedia was totally unreliable back then. So, to be fair.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us sort of to, without a segue, our third category of couples, the power couple. Powered and powered.
Yep.
And we had sort of some debate as to, on some of these, whether they count. But I lay down the law, if they are a hero or villain, I guess, if they run around in a costume, they count.
Okay.
In this scenario.
All right. Because there were two sort of different questions going on. There is the admittedly very gross, and I do not like it, physical logistics of a person with powers and a person without powers. And that's where you get your Woman of Kleenex thing. And I hate that so much that I'm not going to mention it again. And what we're actually going for with this story, which is...
Ollie and Dinah.
Exactly.
Would count.
Yes. Even though, in a technical sense, this fits into the previous category, into the Wonder Woman trope of having a powered woman and an unpowered man.
Right. But Ollie wouldn't stand for that.
No.
Steve
no.
Would not, that characterization.
Yeah. Oh, Ollie being lumped in with Steve. Oh, he would
oh,
not.
Oh, that would
he
be.
Would not.
That's a grave insult.
I am no damsel. Steve's a damsel.
So in this category also, Hawkman and Hawkgirl, sort
yes.
of classically.
The prototypical star-crossed lovers.
Lovers throughout
destined,
time, destiny, all of that.
Destined to be together.
So sort of that really true, one true pairing sort of scenario. Mm-hmm. Or for a while, Storm and Black Panther were married.
Oh.
So you have... have that. Vision and Scarlet Witch. Again, there's some logistics there we really don't need to go into,
except to say, I can dig it.
Or, as you recently covered
mm-hmm.
in episode 150 of Just One of the Guys,
Kyle and Jade.
And that was a fun one. You thought that the imagery at the end of that issue really
it's
worked
so
for you.
It's so good. It's so cute. Now, okay. Here's just a sort of visual difference between these two types of relationships, the hero, non-hero, and the hero and hero. That in the hero, non-hero relationship, you have the Superman. You have Superman carrying Lois Lane, or you have the Flash carrying Iris. But just the final panel of that issue with Kyle and Jade holding hands, and since they can both fly, flying off together, and they're sort of like snuggling their shoulders into each other and leaning their heads on each other as they're flying through the sky. It's just so cute. It's so cute. And this sort of gets us into a literary difference between these two. in the hero and non-hero, the relationship is very much a source of tension. That there are the questions of, is she going to find out my secret identity?
I have to keep this person protected.
What would happen if people found out about my loved ones? My loved ones would be in danger. In the hero-hero relationships, this is not even a question. Sort of like we said with the non-powered non-power, of being able to date within your community, within your friend group.
Right.
There aren't those dangers of, I can't tell them everything. I can't share what my day at quote-unquote work was like. There's going to be all of these questions about, you know, again, sort of biology. If we need to have a discussion about, I'm Kryptonian, is it possible for us to, like, make a baby? Does that even genetically work? You can't have that conversation with someone who doesn't know your secret identity. I am a big fan of hero-hero relationships, just because you're forced to come up with a little bit more of an interesting dynamic or a little bit more of a original source of conflict, because who they are is not inherently a source of conflict in the same way it is if you're dating someone who doesn't know your secret identity.
Right. The Lois Lane book from the late 50s into the 60s relied on the story engine of Lois trying to find out Superman's secret identity to prove he was Clark and or to get him to propose to her.
Yeah.
Both of those built on the lack of knowledge of the secret identity. I mean, that was the story engine. When you change that one thing, because we're teammates and working together, then really everything else changes. The nature of the relationship changes.
And that's the thing is, it's been 65 years. We can do better. I have faith in us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been talking a lot about, we would say, maybe sort of canonical OTPs of relationships that have lasted in comics, either went on for many decades or are currently ongoing or whatever, but relationships that have some history behind them, of some sense of long-term canonicity. This is not to say that we have issues with heroes who are single all the time, perpetually single. I think the perfect example of this is Clint Barton, Hawkeye, who's had what, like 12 girlfriends and 22 issues or something?
And a marriage. So, yeah, Mockingbird died, came back to life, they were married, they were divorced. I'm not even sure what order those four things happened in. But, yes, let's just say he's done pretty well for himself. He and Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Sort of dominating the Marvel Universe.
Players.
Yeah. We can call them sort of the Dick Graysons.
Yeah.
Or Kyle Rayner. Or as I once said, Kyle and the Girl of the Month Club.
Yep.
We do need to talk about the big guy, about Superman, because they've changed some things in the new 52.
Mm-hmm.
And I put out to our Facebook page
a little highly informal poll.
Just a little question as to who do you think is or should be Superman's one true love? Including Lois and Lana, Lori Lamaris, Lila Lerall.
Very good, very good.
And of course, Lunder Woman. That's the only way you can date Superman.
I'm going to be honest, I'm a little disappointed that there was no Lex Luthor or Lightning Lad on that list.
I'm just saying. You know, Daniel Butcher did say maybe Batman. I think he may have been saying as best buddies.
We did not look for subtext.
So, just saying. And then, you know, Mark Adams, he thought it was definitely Lois. But, you know, depending on the context, it could be Ma Kent.
Yeah.
Depending on how you're asking the question in terms of the lady in his life.
Yep.
I thought that was fair. And for the most part, you know, Lois tended to win out. Manuel Carmona said that Lois has the history, but he did confessed to liking Smallville, and that Clark and Lana could have worked for him.
It has been unfairly maligned. Though, to be fair, there is lots of reasons. Does not mean it's a terrible relationship.
But David Ace Gutierrez, you know, he said Lois and posted the panel of Aquaman. Superman is in some distress and says, he just keeps saying Lois. Keeps saying Lois. So I think
that's pretty definitive proof.
Yeah.
There was one person who did say Wonder Woman.
Derek said he said Wonder Woman because it just makes sense. I liked David S. Gutierrez, who said Lois. Lana is wonderful, particularly Annette O'Toole, but Lois is his lady.
Yeah.
And I think that's what J. David Weider was saying as well. And Mike Bailey, if we're going to talk Superman, we've got to let...
Go to the pro.
We have to let that Bailey have his say that Lois is his true love. Wonder Woman is who he will end up with after she eventually dies. So that, he was willing to give a both answer, sort of the Doctor Who. He's probably going to live hundreds and hundreds of years. She won't, therefore.
I hate any time that Diana and Clark are a thing. And the fact that it's modern, current, canon going on right now just really irks me.
Now, before we get to that too much, what do you think about Kyle Benning's solution? Four parallel Earths. Where he's dating each one of these separately, and you don't have to read.
As long as I don't have to read anything about Superman and Wonder Woman, I don't have to really think about him and Lana, and I can maybe pick up every fifth issue of him and Lori. I'm good with this.
Let's talk about Superman and Wonder Woman. Take a few deep breaths first.
Order my thoughts.
This is the ultimate power couple. Is that the problem?
Yes.
Okay, I was expecting more of an answer, so maybe you should explain yourself.
Okay, well, now that I've ordered my thoughts of hate, here's the thing. The reason, at least in theory, that we like these characters is because they are more than a who-would-win list of abilities. The reason that we like Superman is because he's also Clark Kent. The reason that we love Wonder Woman is because she's also Diana Prince, or Diana Themyscira, or Queen Diana, however the continuity works. Superman and Wonder Woman are of equal power sets. But I cannot in any way conceptualize that Diana and Clark have more than a fleeting passing interest in one another. I can't wrap my brain around them as people sharing romantic interest.
Because you are saying that they are more than just their powers.
Exactly.
That's basically all they have in common.
Basically.
And a love for truth and justice.
See, but this is the thing. They are the perfect work colleagues.
Exactly.
Superman has basically the same relationship with Wonder Woman that he has with Batman, which is why I kind of liked whoever said Batman.
Daniel Butcher, yeah.
The two of them are so similar that they are like the deepest of platonic bros.
War buddies.
War buddies. That like when the chips are down and when Clark needs someone to like hold him while he cries about his feelings of inferiority or sadness, or he has a fight with Lois and he doesn't know how to handle it, who does he go to? Diana. That Diana is like his best lady bro. That she is there to give him relationship advice and keep him kind of centered and talk to him about things. And yes, the two of them can go toe-to-toe in a power struggle. Which is another reason why both of them would consider it totally inappropriate for them to date.
The world needs them to be a potential balance for the other, and they're smart enough to know that.
That's why it's a trinity. Mm-hmm. Because if Wonder Woman and Batman team up, they can take down Superman. It's a checks and balances thing.
Right, gotcha.
I get why people put it in Elseworlds, but that's why I didn't read Elseworlds.
I tend to agree with you that it's probably not the greatest idea. I like the idea of them exploring it in canon, though.
Yeah.
I like the notion that for 3 years out of 75, the writers took a shot at this and saw what they could. So sort of from an outsider perspective, you know, I'm intrigued by the concept of it. It's not what I want to see long term, but I don't mind it happening now, as long as it ends
soon. Yeah, this is, I think, my biggest problem with this question is that I have really big trust issues with DC writers.
Right.
Because they, for whatever reason, given the last like 5 to 8 years, have decided, hey, you know, all of these couples that are really happy and that people are liking them, let's just ruin all of them because I feel like it. You know, Batwoman and Maggie Sawyer can't be happy and together.
Well, to be fair, all of this...
Superman and Lois can't be dating. There needs to be love triangles in it. I'm just... Why? Why?
We can blame Mephisto for this somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of when the pulling apart of marriages started.
Yeah. Which I almost wouldn't mind. Okay, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind if the comics were handling the relationships the way that Flash was handling relationships.
The TV show.
Yes, the TV show The Flash. Because in that, there are acknowledgments of people's complex feelings for one another. Barry is in love with Iris and has now told her. Yay! She is very weirded out by the fact that a person she essentially considers her brother is like, I want to date you. She's like, that's weird. Because it kind of is. She has feelings for the Flash, which are complicated by the fact that she has a steady boyfriend who she also loves and who loves her. That is a genuine reason to not have Barry and Iris together on the show. Right. It's not a Ross and Rachel from Friends of they're gonna get together and they're pulled apart and then they're gonna get together and then stupid misunderstanding and then they're gonna get together and then nope, I lied to you for no reason. I don't know how I feel about you, but I'm very happy in the relationship that I'm in now.
Now, specifically on Wonder Woman and Superman, you liked a version for Wonder Woman from the Justice League.
I was kind of a fan of Diana and Bruce. I kind of dug that. But I also dug that in that show, in one of the episodes, Bruce calls her on it of like, we are never going to have a functional relationship. You know that, right? And she's like, yeah, I do, but it's still nice to think about. He's like, oh, okay. They had what I think is the closest to a romantic relationship that any two members of the Trinity can pull off.
Right.
Because in that sense, they both recognized, you're my colleague and my partner, and we work together, and we save the world together, and that's awesome. I very strongly admire you. I also find you somewhat physically attractive and could envision myself in a relationship with you. However, we both have greater responsibilities that make this essentially impossible, but we're still going to flirt shamelessly, knowing it's not going to go anywhere. And that's about as serious as any of the members of specifically the Trinity can really get,
right,
for reasons right mentioned previously. And also, I think closer than Superman and Wonder Woman would ever get, because I can't imagine that Superman would be down with the casual flirting thing. He's all about that
right
serious monogamy.
Right. We've talked about Superman and Batman. Let's talk about him again, just in this context. The Super Son stories.
Yes.
The Bob Haney Super Son
when
stories.
When in doubt, always go back to Bob Haney.
Which you've talked about on the Superman and Batman show with Mike Bradley and on an episode of your show, episode 4.
Yes.
Of Uncovering the Bronze Age. And I read that trade as well. In your imagination, who are the wives? Who are the mothers? Because they're never shown. They're shown from the back or in veils or hats over their faces. So it's never technically revealed. I'm not asking who do you think they were. Who would you want those women to be?
In my mind, both of them could only ever possibly be Lois and Selina Kyle.
Now, of course, I always have to put in my plug for Lori Lamoris.
Obviously.
Because
He proposed to her.
I mean, that's
pretty good
evidence.
They were almost married.
Of course, that's Lois. Now, on the Batman side, I think it's awesome that, to me, the two great loves of Batman's life, to me, are Selina and Talia.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have a lot in common. And they really have a lot in common with him, which is why I could actually see either of those working.
Yeah.
Just because they are so committed to their cause. They're passionate for justice as they see it. With Selina, especially, that has been there from her very first appearance in early 40s. That flirtatious, that connection
yeah
between those two has been there from the start. That is not a modern development. And it was certainly there right from the beginning with Talia when Denny O'Neill introduced that character. So either one of those works for me for a eventual settling down for Bruce.
The problem with Bruce is that as Bruce and Batman, he essentially has a split personality. And he, we know from various stories, considers his Batman self much more true than his Bruce Wayne self. That's a disguise. People are always like, Clark Kent's a disguise. I'm like, no. Bruce Wayne is a disguise. Bruce Wayne is not a real person. Which is why nobody who knows or cares about Bruce Wayne, aside from, you know, Alfred, will ever be a long-standing major part of Bruce's life. Only people who know and care about Batman. Which is why him and Talia, or him and Selina, would work so well. Because they already know him primarily as Batman, and are flirtatious with him as Batman. It's very strange, because in their, I'll say, real selves, they're both so much more grounded than quote-unquote Bruce Wayne.
Mm, right.
But in their super selves, they are both so much more fun-loving, relaxed, and right, easygoing than Batman. That in a way, they are the perfect complement. It's the opposites attract. For both of them, both poles attract to Batman.
Yeah, I could see that. Either one of those works for me.
Agreed.
But for practical purposes, it is Superman and Lois. Oh, I mean, yeah. that sort of has to be.
Who else?
We joke about others, but...
It's not.
Yeah, it's not.
Lois is his lady.
Lois is his lady. We're going to wrap up in a few minutes with a list of some of our favorite couples or couples that we'd like to see. But I wanted just to mention a couple other things in passing before we get to that. Special recognition has to be given to Chuck Tane.
Oh, yes. Bouncing Boy.
Bouncing Boy.
Oh, please. Bouncing Man.
Bouncing Man. Bouncing Bro. We're going to award him the Relatively Geeky's Fanboy Award for Romantic Overachievement.
For dating both Duo Damsel and Duo Damsel.
Looking like us.
Yes. Schlubby nerd. Yeah.
Impressive.
Why do you hate Bouncy Boy so much? Are you just jealous because he got two hot girlfriends?
And of course, in the Legion, we talked about Karate Kid and Princess Projectas, their wedding issue.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad. There were some tragic relationships in the Legion as well. But I think that's what I liked. Again, you've got a group of anywhere from 18 to 497 people in the Legion at any one time. There's going to be workplace romances. I thought that was a natural place among teens.
Especially when they're all between the ages of 14 and 25.
So I thought...
Sunboy and the Girl of the Month Club?
Hey now. He gets it done. Okay, we call him the 30th century's Dick Grayson.
Did you ever see the issue where he went on three separate dates with Triplicate Girl? It's one of the best issues of all time. It was amazing.
Have to give a special shout out, especially in the TV show, to Captain America and Peggy. Of course, in the comics, it was also Cap and Sharon.
Maybe
Carter,
Sharon, yeah.
Who was eventually a sister, then a daughter, then a niece, then a grand.
As the timeline shifted, so has.
Now we'll point out for the shippers,
mm-hmm,
that in the House of M alternate universe, Cap was never frozen, and he married Peggy right after World War II.
Oh, that's so cute!
Isn't that nice? And of course, as always in this setting, we have to mention the Dibneys.
Favorite
couple ever.
They're the best! The actual, factual, best couple in comics. We're going to be getting to our favorites list. This is why I wanted to specify that they're not our best list, because otherwise both of us would say, in the same order, the Kents, and the Dibneys.
Yeah, so...
So we're going to make it more interesting than that, but the Dibneys do get the honorary, like, number zeroth best comic couples.
So do you want to start with... Now, did we say that these are our favorite couples, or the couples we want to see, or just couples' favorite couples?
Our favorite couples, the couples that we love the most.
Toss one out.
I was going to put on this list, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Batwoman and Maggie Sawyer, but I felt that that was a little bit unfair since I've only ever read maybe one issue that featured them. It seemed not right to just go for a straight diversity pick, but I am going to put out Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy as my third favorite couple in comics, because as of like 3 months ago, they are canon in Sensation Comics, one of the online digital comics.
Because what would Mr. J say about that?
Mr. J doesn't get a say in anything.
Exactly, there you go.
As of Assault on Arkham Asylum, Mr. J has been firmly kicked to the curb, yes, and more's the better, because her and Ivy are adorable together. Much like Batman and his villainesses, there's just something about couples that do crime together. Crime fighting, crime committing. One of the cutest episodes of Batman the Animated Series that ever happened was the Harley and the Ivy, where the two of them went and spent Christmas together and beat up random muggers and stole a bunch of stuff and decorated a Christmas tree together. It's adorable.
Well, first on my list is an obvious one. We weren't allowed to pick the Dibneys.
Or the Kents.
So I did save one that was teetering on the edge of we can't pick them. That would be, for me, the Stranges. No surprise, I've covered 4 different issues of related to Adam Strange over on the Quarterbin podcast. And I just love the tragic nature of that relationship. And speaking to this idea that comics, we shouldn't have, you know, mature adult relationships. You know, kids aren't going to want that. They're not going to understand it. I was introduced to Adam Strange when I was somewhere between, you know, the ages of 7 and 12. And there was something about that tragic nature of that relationship, about as long distance a relationship as you can get, that I understood at some level was really sad. And I mean, that worked for me before I really knew much about boys and girls. I knew that that relationship was hard, was difficult, and I really appreciated that. I mean, I got that.
Yeah.
Adam and Alana Strange are always high on my list.
Well, if you had your cheat, because you couldn't pick the Dibneys, so you picked the Stranges, I have my cheat. I couldn't pick Jonathan and Martha Kent, so I picked Jay and Joan Garrick.
Oh, okay. Substitute Kents.
Because the Grand Flashes, I don't even know what they are. The
Grand Flashes.
Grandma and Grandpa Flash are the most adorable. I love the Flash family. I love any time that the family structure of the Flash family is dealt with. And any time that you have Joan Garrick getting to be the Ma Kent and being, "You damn speedsters, slow down, put down my china, don't run in the house." Only problem is she tells them don't run in the house. They're already out the back door 4 blocks away, but you get my drift. Anytime you can do that, it's just so cute. And this is the thing. Not all comics characters need to be happily married for 50 years and have all these kids and this giant extended family. But it's nice to have some.
It's here at number 2. I'm going to put that here as number 2.
Superman
and Lori Lamars, for the same reason that the Stranges work for me, because the golden age of comic books is 11.
Yeah.
That is, when you were 11. And that's when I was reading DC Superstars of Space over and over and over. That's when I was reading Superman from the 30s to 70s over and over and over. So I'm saying Superman and Lori Lamars. That's going to be on Earth A for Atlantis. Or
Alan.
Either way.
My final pick was one that we almost talked about a little bit beforehand before I told him to throw a lid on that can of worms. But
she shushed me.
It's true. But my personal, not best, but favorite relationship in comic books is, in fact, Oliver Queen and Dinah. I love Green Arrow and Black Canary, because we've been talking about the importance of variety, of having estranged exes or partners or close friends or flirtation, marriage, all of these sorts of things.
That relationship has it all.
They have had literally every stage of a relationship at some point. that they were flirtatiously involved. They were partners. They were dating. They were engaged. They were married, divorced. Kind of awkward because then they went back to being co-workers and then she was his boss.
When she ran the Justice League, yeah.
That they have had every sort of relationship dynamic. And in my mind, even though their relationship is not perfect, their relationship is great. Because regardless of what that relationship is going to be fascinating to read and really interesting. Whether it is them just sort of flirting with each other and making puns about her being his little birdie, that's cute. If it's them grappling with difficulties of having a hero-hero relationship and feeling their relationship as a couple being strained by what they've sworn themselves to do, that, not unlike Batman, justice always comes first in the relationship. And if either of you need time, you can't really take time to go to marriage counseling because any time that you have off, you just want to sleep. Because as soon as you're on call, you've got to go save the world. That's really difficult. Or if they're exes or trying to work through things, whatever it is that they are doing when they are working together, in any context, it's going to be interesting. And like,
that's a great one.
It's something that they really do get on Arrow, is that Oliver really does, in a lot of ways, have a self-destructive personality.
Mm-hmm.
That no matter how good a thing is,
right,
he's gonna kind of ruin it for himself. And that includes his relationship with Dinah. But she wasn't a perfect person in the relationship either. And you could understand why they fought, why they had difficulties, that he was being a pompous ass, she wasn't talking to him. You completely bought them getting together, separating, and then in some sense finding an equilibrium and getting back together. Anytime that you have them together, it's going to be good. Even
like
if it's
that.
Terrible.
Well, exactly. It'll be good to read. And then my number one, and, you know, we've given Marvel a bit of a short shrift here because we tend to be DC people. But my number one is, I think, the classic Marvel couple. And it's one we haven't mentioned yet. Sue Storm and Victor Von Doom.
All right.
Because let's be honest. Reed Richards. Adequate husband, perhaps. Not a great father.
Okay.
Victor, I think Victor's a better choice.
Here's the thing. We were having this discussion. I was like, of course you're going to pick Sue and Victor. Okay, fine. And then we started talking about it, and I was realizing, you know, of Sue's three choices, romantically, none of them are A-plus quality men. You know, Namor, literally in love with himself. Victor
and
Von Doom, evil. Reed Richards, complete jackass.
Victor Von Doom, slightly misunderstood.
right, okay.
I'm with you on the other two.
There is actually a very low bar for having a relationship with Sue Storm. It's like,
I
must
think Victor
be,
crosses that.
Must be male and living. And that's about it. Reed Richards, a lot of this comes to the 60s, but I'm also going to give him crap for their relationship not being updated in the last 45 years. As a boyfriend/fiancé, adequate for the 60s. The millisecond they get married, he turns into an asshat. And then the second the kid is born, he's like, want nothing to do with. It's like B- for boyfriending, C- for marriage, and a D+ at most for being involved in your family. Like, you made a child. Now we're just going to go find a witch and shuttle him off to live with her in the middle of nowhere. This can only end well.
Here's my evidence. The Richards' second child, Valeria. Smartest super child ever.
Right.
In the world.
Complete genius.
Where does she choose to live? With
Uncle Victor.
Uncle Doom in Latveria. Of her own free will, because she knows he's going to take a little bit better care of her than Pops is going to back in New York City.
And I mean, she's not wrong. That's the part about it. She's not wrong.
Where is a safer place, safer locale to raise a child? Castle Von Doom, the Baxter Building. Come on!
Not even close.
Come on!
Not even close. This is the thing. It's like, well, you know, all Namor just sits around looking at himself in mirrors, blowing his mighty horn. Reed Richards spends all day looking at his science, pouring test tubes into each other, and, you know, shuttling his family out of his public life. Von Doom spends most of his time subjugating his willing, well-ruled people for their own good, building science robots, and being an involved caretaker.
It's not that crazy a notion.
The more you say it, the less crazy it gets. Mostly because the further removed we get from 1960s, the worse of a human being Reed Richards gets.
Finally, someone who understands. All it takes is hanging out with me for 23 years, and eventually they come around.
And then the more we talked about this, the more I was like, I actually kind of want to see that relationship now. I kind of want to see a married couple where the husband is the wife's supervillain. A sort of Mr. and Mrs. Doom, if you will.
Yeah, the Mr. and Mrs. Smith of Marvel Comics. I'd like it.
I'd actually be really interested in seeing that. Of them having normal marital struggles, and then having normal superhero struggles, but as soon as you come home and the door closes, you've got to leave work at the office and deal with your family life. I'd actually be really interested in reading that book.
Let's be honest, Sue has spent, you know, she spent the first 10 years or so, at least, being ignored by Reed and the FF and, you know, shuttled off to not fight. Doom is going to let her fight.
Yep.
Doom would let her be Empress.
It's true.
I mean, he would give her some authority, let her use her powers. That's more than Stan and Jack. I mean, that's more than Reed and Johnny and Ben ever did in the 60s and early 70s.
Well, I know your tears will dry when I hand you the keys to a shiny new Australia.
It's not a bad wedding present.
I'm just saying there have been worse things probably that Reed has given her for presents, like the particle accelerator or a portal to the negative zone.
I was going to say.
Or some sort of horrible infectious disease that they have to fight that's been imparted in their child. The more you say it, the less crazy you sound.
Now, I'm sure that this is an area where our listeners may have a few things to say. So we welcome all feedback.
And crazy opinions.
About Lori Lamaris, Dr. Doom.
The epic ship that is Victoroo. Oh, if you could see the look of shame and pride that he is giving me.
Victoroo, exactly. Victor and Sue, thank you. It is officially on now. We're trying to come up with relationship names for our buddies on Gotham. In one of the recent episodes, Fish Mooney and
Harvey Bullock
expressed some feelings for each other and a deep connection. So that would obviously be Fishhook.
Which I was very proud of you to recognize.
Then we were trying to come up with one for Jim Gordon. And now on the show, he's gotten some quality time with Leslie Tompkins. And I kind of like that. The only problem was, only thing I could come up with was Gorkins. That is just not a very romantic name for your couple.
That
you cannot be Gorkins. The least romantic syllables ever.
That word is far below the base bar for anything to be associated with Marina Baccarin.
Jim Gordon, Leslie Tompkins. What else could you come up with?
Jim Lee.
But neither of them have pouches. How could they be Jim Lee? I don't understand. So, if you want to send us some feedback about Jim Lee or Gorkins or Victoroo or Fishhook or any of the other awesome couples that we mentioned, or come up with a few of your own. This is especially where our friends on the Marvel side of the world can come in. Because that's just an area where we are.
It's just a huge blind spot for us.
We're a little bit weaker over there. So tell us who your favorite Tony Stark girlfriend is. Or your favorite Clint Barton girlfriend. Tony Stark and the lady bartender around the corner. That does not count.
No.
So any feedback can be sent to us through our email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com.
Or you can leave us a comment on our website at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can also send us some feedback or a rating and review through iTunes. Just search for Relatively Geeky or the Short Box Showcase.
And now that we have a Facebook page, you can like that and participate in conversations like we had about who Superman should be dating.
And see pictures of the red candle.
Thank you, Andy Kapelish. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. We will talk to you later.
Bye, guys. I think the way that you do a Barry White impression is just like every five words, just say, hello, ladies.
Hello, and
well, actually, no, that's the Old Spice guy. Look at your podcast. Now back to me. Now back at your podcast. Now back to me. If you didn't want Lois and Clark together in the New 52, just introduce, and this is my coworker Lois and her boyfriend. Congratulations, because Clark is this thing called a man of honor. And he's not going to go and wreck somebody's relationship just because he has a crush on their girlfriend.
And Ron's beard. So we like two of the four geeks. Are they two of the four geeks?
Or I'm pretty sure.
Four and a half geeks. It's very confusing how they count down there in Florida. It's very confusing how they count down there in Georgia.
Please. We want to insult them for things they actually are.
Yeah, I almost,
not for things we forget they are.
I almost said they were from Florida. Woo! Talk about an insult. Scott doesn't listen to this, does he? Okay. Billy Hogan, sorry.
Sorry, Billy.
Supergirl and Lex Luthor?
Ew.
They sort of dated for a little while. Well,
God, that's weird.
Wasn't really dating. It was. She may have been a clone. I don't know. I was getting confused at that point.
All right. I bring this up because in my mind, regardless of continuity, Lex Luthor is always like 62. And
Supergirl
Kara is always 17.
14, 17, and yes.
It's just wrong. I thought we agreed that we were not going to put them on our list.
Oh, yeah.
Do you not remember? Huh. 45 minutes? Well, okay, it's been like 2.5 hours. But do you not remember 2.5 hours ago when I told you, don't put them on your list?
Maybe I can change it in my head brain fast.
Think quickly. You can leave the Stranges on, but the Dibneys are right out.